Thanks for downloading this podcast from Love Sport Radio. For more, go to lovesportradio.com for all the latest podcasts, news, and views. Or for more, follow us at Love Sport Radio on Twitter.
This is Love Sport, the Manchester City fan show on Love Sport, in association with the Man City Show podcast. Nigel Rothband here alongside Paul Denby as well. We're with you for another half an hour. We're going to be bringing you a little bit more reaction to that victory over Watford. Of course, 8-0, five goals after 18 minutes. Incredible. The fastest any side has gone ahead 5-0 in a Premier League match. David Silva's goal, the fastest in the Premier League this season. Aguero scoring 7-7. That's the first time anybody's done that since Romelu Lukaku in 2015. The stats and the records just keep coming with this Man City side. And we are looking at eight reasons to celebrate that game. Eight reasons why you should be a Manchester City fan. Nigel, you're rolling in with number five.
OK, I'm going back a bit again now. And this is about records. And something that I think a lot of City fans are very proud of. We hold two records here, one for the men's game, one for the women's game, which is the highest gate for a men's game outside of Wembley, which goes back to 1934 against Stoke City in the FA Cup. You asked me a quiz question last week, so I'm going to ask you, do you know what that gate was against Stoke City? My dad was there. It was a quarter final in 1934 against Stoke City, FA Cup at Main Road as it was. And it still stands as the highest gate outside of Wembley.
Outside of Wembley, okay. So I would say it's going to be around the 84,000 mark.
Smart ass. 84,569
there we go.
The correct answer. Excellent. And, of course, very recently, only a few weeks ago, of course, the women played against Stretford, and there's a crowd of over 32,000 at that game for a women's game. So both for the men's game and the women's game, Manchester City hold the record.
Incredible. By the way, my guess was better than producer Josh, who went with 113,000. I mean, crikey. Talk about getting him through the gate. Well, I'm glad I got that right. I'm sorry for getting... It's not always good when you ask a quiz question and someone gets it right because you want to give them the answer that they got wrong. But I do apologise for that one.
I don't apologise. I'm impressed. That's brilliant.
Paul.
Oh, I'm going to play the theme that I did earlier with the first team to do the European domestic double. Last season, we're the first team to do the domestic treble. And that's a fantastic reason to support Manchester City. No team has done it before. Teams have won three trophies in a season, but not the domestic treble, the three trophies. And now we've won the Championship, the Premiership, stroke Old Division One, the FA Cup and the League Cup. We've won each of those six times now.
Wow. That's incredible. Two very good reasons to support Manchester City. One from the past and one from the present as well. That's the beauty of this show, gents. We're making it all relevant. That's what I like here. The Manchester City fan show on Love Sport. Now, someone who is relevant at the moment and scored a hat-trick at the weekend, of course, was Bernardo Silva, who should be in the headlines for the right reasons. However, Bernardo Silva did then release a tweet on his social media on Twitter comparing Manchester City teammate Benjamin Mendy to a character on the packet of a sweet called Conguitos. I'll tell you. It's a sweet brand available in Spain and Portugal. It's caused a bit of a stir. The FA have written to Manchester City asking the club for its response to that tweet. We had Paul Mortimer on Drive earlier on discussing that particular situation. Here's what he had to say.
I'll talk for myself and my own personal experience,
yeah,
not the historical aspects. When you are likened to something like that, when you are ridiculed for looking like that or appearing to be looked like that, when you are looked down on, when you are treated a certain way, marginalised, isolated, bullied, you know, as a kid, because I know I experienced all of that for certain pictures like that, and they come from a by and gone era where black people were seen as inferior, as lesser, you know, as slaves, as whatever you want to look at. Even if you look at, you know, the black and white minstrel show around that era, how black people were viewed.
And this is exactly that kind of imagery. You've got the overplayed big red lips, you've got the popping white eyes.
Right.
It's very minstrel show.
It is very minstrel show. It's you know, unfortunately, there will be a lot of white people who say, why is this racist? Because it's not on their radar. They've never experienced any kind of abuse linked to pictures like that. You know, from a kid growing up, that's something that I've experienced.
An interesting debate to be had here, fellas. And listen, Paul Mortimer alluded to it there, and he said there will be so many white people that say, why was this racist? And there were responses to the tweet of the Blanco version of the tweet, where it's a white character and not a black character. And people say, well, what if we put that up with Kevin De Bruyne? Would it still be considered racist? And I think when you have these discussions on radio, in the media, we are three white men here having this discussion now, and people will say, well, they can't really comment on it because they don't really know what it's like. I think that the question that's been raised is Bernardo Silva racist? And everybody has said, well, most people have said, no, he's not racist, but was the tweet racist? Yes, it probably was. I think we'll get into the debate here. My opinion is that why do it publicly? Why put it out on social media? And that's a wider debate that you have to have a discussion about. Why not just send it in a private WhatsApp group? Because it seems like Benjamin Mendy, who did respond to the tweet and didn't seem to take offence, a tweet that was then taken down by Bernardo Silva, but quite critically has now kept up the tweet where he said, geez, in the response, I can't just have a laugh with my friend these days. Man City haven't responded yet, but I'm presuming in time, Nigel, they will release some sort of statement, do you think?
Oh, I think they'll have to. I think there's no doubt this has caused quite a stir. And Paul has been very forthright in his views, and I respect that completely. So let's take this sort of step at a time. We both know these are two young men who are active on social media, who are mates. I don't know Bernardo Silva. I've never met him, but he appears to be a very educated young man. He speaks very well. His English is excellent. And I suspect this was a bit of banter, as they say, between him and his friend. Clearly, this is racist. In my view, this is racist to put a picture like that with Mendy as a young child and put those two things together. I can completely understand and recognise that that is a racist thing to do. I don't think, like most people have said, that Bernardo Silva is a racist himself. I'm convinced of that. And you can't, in this day and age, if you're on social media, you can't have that dialogue with your mate through Twitter, because it's going to be picked up and it's going to be seen as it has been and interpreted the way it's been interpreted. And I think it was a huge error of judgment on Bernardo Silva's part. And I think it was a mistake. I think he was wrong to do it, and he was right to take it down. So clearly now the FA will investigate, and I'm sure Manchester City will make the appropriate statement, and I guess that Bernardo Silva will make the appropriate statement. We talked about this on the podcast tonight, actually, and John Stapleton, who comes on our show, actually made a very good point and suggested maybe a large donation to kick it out or something like that might be a good thing to do from Bernardo, to recognise the error that he's made and making a contribution that's going to actually help in the long run to stop racism.
I get that, but my fear with that is the backlash would then come potentially, that people might go, oh, here's a rich white man going, here you go, here's some money, go, it can sort it out that way. Whereas maybe it's the education. We often hear John Barnes come out and say, look, you can stop people going into stadiums, you can find these clubs, but it's more about that education. I don't know. And we say that Bernardo Silva is a well-educated young man. You can tell that. He's also a young man, as is Benjamin Mendy. They have their jokes behind closed doors. And is it maybe part of the fact that they probably don't see it as racist because they haven't grown up in that era, and maybe they don't understand it to be racist? But then you also look at the club. Surely someone should be saying to them, guys, you've got to think about what you put on social media. We've seen it in the summer with players that go out and do things abroad and they plaster all this stuff over social media. It's not that bad. In this instance, it is. But ordinarily on social media, it's not that bad. But just do it privately. You've got nothing to prove to your fans. And I know that on one hand, maybe you're trying to connect with your fans, and there's such a big thing about the disconnect between players and fans now. They almost go overboard with social media to be like, no, 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 we're one of you, we're chatting amongst yourselves. But it just didn't need to go on social media, did it?
No, it certainly didn't. I agree with everything that Nigel said. It was naive on Bernardo from what he did. He shouldn't be doing that. Yes, the club has some responsibility to educate and keep the younger players in particular right up to date with what they should be doing on social media. I think I'm pretty certain that there's been private words had with some of the City players about what they have put on social media. And I think Bernardo should really say, yeah, I shouldn't have done that. He should put something out there saying it was a mistake and I will have some re-education there. Whether there's any financial contribution, I understand your point on that, Matt, and could be looked at in that point of view. But he does need something that really comes back on social media to say, yeah, that was a mistake. I was a bit stupid, but I'm certainly not a racist.
Yeah, and of course they do use social media because they make money from it. Maybe that's part of it. But you're right. I think maybe a combined statement or a campaign that they get involved in. Like you said, it's quite clear that Bernardo Silva's not a racist young man. It's just a joke he's had between himself and Benjamin Mendy. And then another way you can almost look at it, I think, is the sense that, are we ever going to be able to deal with the problem if every time a sort of joke is made that it's brought back and, oh, you can't do that, you can't, because that's, you know, we're thinking about what happened all those years ago. Again, I haven't been through that. We haven't been through that. So it's difficult.
And I think all you have to do is listen to Paul Mortimer's words. And I think that helps you understand from his perspective, as you rightly said, we're three white men sitting here having this conversation from our perspective. But I think Paul's words are very, very powerful. And I think he summed it up very, very well.
Indeed. Okay. Moving on, we're going to look ahead to games coming up, and we're going to first start with Preston. We've got Preston in the Carabao Cup. Is this a tournament? And I know we level this every season at the big clubs, and we frown upon these earlier rounds in the Carabao Cup, but is this a tournament that Pep Guardiola will be going all out to win again this season?
Interesting question, because I think there's different views from City fans. A lot of fans would say, yeah, why can't we go and win it again? We should be able to beat Preston with a reasonable team tomorrow, a mixture of youth and experience. Our second 11, let's be honest about it, is a decent team and could beat most teams in the Premier League, let alone a good championship team, and Preston are near the top. I would be looking to play a mixed team tomorrow. People argue that we've got to concentrate on the Champions League, and my counter-argument to that is, at the moment, the Carabao Cup, we should get through the groups phase relatively easily, he says, a little bit arrogantly perhaps, but I'll say it anyway. Then the next phase of the Champions League doesn't kick in until February, and before the Carabao Cup final, there's only one knockout phase, a round of 16 first leg. So effectively, you could play and get through and win that one. The FA Cup is the one that interferes more with the Champions League. So I would say, let's go for the Carabao Cup as best we can and put out a decent team tomorrow night.
Certainly Pep's track record has been precisely that. He takes every competition seriously. He wants to win every competition, and indeed last season did, as we know, as I've said a number of times. There's something that makes me think that it might be different this year. I don't know what it is, but I think potentially he might say, actually, this is less important, and actually this year the Premier League, the Champions League, they're the two that we have to win, and might just take his foot off the gas and play a slightly more weakened team than they would have done before. I don't know what makes me say that, but I just feel that's a potential possibility this time round.
I think when you look at priorities this season, like you said, you've got the Premier League, you've got the Champions League. I think those two are the key ones that Pep Guardiola is going to be going all out to win.
And Preston will be up for it. They've made a very good start to their season. There'll be 20,000 there. It's, you know, their cup final, if you like. It won't be straightforward at all. And we know we've got frailties at the back. I suspect it was very interesting to see him bring on sort of Eric Garcia, Angelino and Cancelo at the weekend against Watford. And I suspect we know the reasons why. I suspect they will all start. Foden, of course, has had a bit of a bug. It wasn't even on the bench. If he's fit, I suspect he might start as well. So you are going to see the changes. As Paul says, we've got a pretty strong second 11. But I'm just feeling that maybe Pep might not be prioritising this quite as much as he has in the past couple of seasons.
100% record in all competitions, I think, for Preston at Deepdell this season. Just quickly, before we move on, another player who may be appearing in the Carabao Cup this week against Arsenal is Muric, who's obviously on loan at Nottingham Forest, but has lost his spot in the side to Bryce Samba, who's come in as a goalkeeper for Forest. Muric, of course, were they errors? You don't know in that opening game against West Brom at the start of the campaign. But this is something that Pep might look at, right, and say, well, hang on a second. There's no point him festering on the bench at Forest. He'd be better off coming back to Manchester City. Are you surprised that he's lost his spot at Forest?
I've not followed their games closely enough to say that he's had such a bad start to the season, but he's a decent goalkeeper. He played well when he played for us last season in the cup competition, so I'm a little bit surprised. Maybe he's lost his confidence after a poor start there, and therefore the management down there has said, actually, we've got to rest you and give you a few games out, and you've got to fight your way back. But good point. If I was Pep, I'd say, well, actually, I'd rather have him back at City to learn more from our goalkeepers than learning from your lot.
Yeah, it does seem bizarre when these players go on loan to other clubs and don't actually end up playing for them. We're going to be looking ahead to the Everton game on the Man City Fan Show on Love Sport.
Love Sport.
This is indeed Love Sport on the Man City Fan Show with the Man City Show podcast. Of course, Nigel Rothband here and Paul Denby here with me, Matt Beadle, as well. We're with you until 10 p.m. this evening. And of course, if you want to join the debate, it's very easy to do so. just drop us a call, 0208 7020 558. You can WhatsApp us on that number as well, or tweet us at Love Sport Radio. Now, we have a theme going through today's show because Manchester City romped to an 8-0 victory over Watford this weekend. We are listing 8 reasons why you should support Manchester City. 8 reasons to be thankful for supporting Man City. Number 3, please, Nigel.
I'm going to sort of title this one Moments. There have been 2 moments where I've been very, very fortunate to be present at both of these. The first one was at Wembley against Gillingham, when Paul Dickoff scored a last gasp winner to take us to extra time. And who knows what would have happened if that goal had not gone in. We hadn't gone to extra time. We hadn't won on penalties and clawed our way back from the third tier of English football. So that's number one. And the second moment, you know what's coming next, of course, against Queen's Park Rangers, last game of the season, to win the Premier League title, to snatch it from Stretford Red Sox, who just won at Sunderland, and they thought they'd won it. And I was at both, and I sobbed uncontrollably at both, and I'm not ashamed to say it. So those sort of moments, what is there not to love about Manchester City, Matt?
And what's not to love about sobbing at football? It's part and parcel, isn't it?
Absolutely, all day long.
I was actually with a Manchester City fan for that Paul Dickoff moment. Crikey, the windows nearly got caved in. He went absolutely bonkers. And the celebration is the one that always gets me from Nicky Weaver at the end, when he just lost his head and just started running. And it took Morrison. Morrison.
That's right.
First name? Is it
Danny.
No, the big lumbering midfielder. I can't remember.
It was
Paul Morrison, maybe. Was he? Yeah. It took him
I'm thinking of the cricketer, Danny Morrison.
Yeah.
What's his name?
Was it Paul Morrison?
No.
Tony Morrison?
It'll come to us. Keep talking.
Anyway, John Morrison, maybe.
No.
We'll get there.
Paul.
Our ability to laugh at ourselves is always something about Man City fans from a history point of view. I remember 1996, we needed as many points as we could to stay up, and it was just all going horribly wrong. But we had a game against Queen's Park Rangers, about 3 games from the end of the season, and Jamie Pollock, bless him, manages to head the ball over our keeper and give an open goal for QPR. It was absolutely, I think just fans just sat there in amazement thinking, this is just typical City. We went on to draw that game 2-2. And then in that same season, the last game of the season, we effectively needed to win to try and stay up. And we thought that a draw might make it. And we started playing in the corner flag with about 2 minutes to go. And it obviously wasn't enough. And that's just typical Man City. But we have a great ability to laugh at ourselves.
That was a staggering moment, wasn't it? The fact that the time wasting occurred, conflicting reports coming from fans from the sideline. And it wouldn't happen now because everybody has all the information at their fingertips. But the Jamie Pollock goal, the fact that he flicked it over another player and then headed it over his own keeper.
That's right. It was incredible. It would have been a brilliant goal had he been going the right direction.
Hmm. And Andy Morrison wouldn't have done that, would he?
Andy Morrison absolutely would not have done that. No, he wouldn't have done. He would have been there to stop anybody that came in his way. Correct. An absolute unit that bloke is, by the way, wasn't he?
Yeah.
Incredible to think that he was a successful Premier League footballer at that level. You don't really see players like that anymore. Sorry, we're going to move on to the victory over Watford. 8-0. Now, don't shout at me, fellas. I'm going to say, potentially, I feel like Man City missed a trick here. Could well have been a record Premier League victory. Should have been more.
If you start with the negatives, it's fair to say Aguero was not exactly on fire, was he? I mean, he hit the post, what, twice?
Mm-hmm.
Missed a sitter.
Mm-hmm.
De Bruyne at the end, what was he doing? Should have scored. So actually, you're absolutely right. Having said that, when you score 5 goals in the first, whatever it is, 16, 17 minutes, and you dominate a game, let's be honest, no disrespect to Watford, but they were not great. They were not good.
And they were awful.
They were terrible.
Yeah.
So to dominate a game like that and to score some stunning goals, you can kind of excuse it. But you imagine if Aguero, who did score a penalty, if he'd been on fire, what it could have been. And I think even the Watford keeper said that it should have been 12. Well,
Ben Foster said without a doubt that Man City are the best team he has ever faced in his life. This is a goalkeeper who's made more saves than any other Premier League goalkeeper in the history of the competition. So for him to say that, a former Manchester United goalkeeper as well, for him to say that, is quite a huge accolade. But I do think, and I'm not trying to look at a negative on it, but I do think Aguero would have come off that pitch disappointed because he would have seen that as a great opportunity to, you know, further his chance of getting the Golden Boot this season.
Most definitely. He missed... He hit the post with one which, yeah, he could have scored it, and he put one wide where he should have scored as well. And it wasn't just that. Mahrez hit the bar as well with a header. The keeper made a couple of very good saves. It was one of those games that, yeah, 8-0 was a fair reflection, but it could have been, and if it had been 10, 11 or 12, that also would have been a fair reflection. Watford were absolutely abysmal. And if they carry on playing with their heads down like that, they're going to finish 20th in the Premier League. They were awful.
Do you think it was understandable of Pep Guardiola to not lash out, but hit back at the reporters when they said, you know, is that they had something to prove today after that defeat? And he said, hang on a second, after everything this team has achieved, do you really think they have something to prove? We will lose games at the moment. It's just the way that it is.
Listen, Pep has nothing to prove, in my view. We won 4 trophies last season, if you include the Charity Shield. We were the Centurions the season before. We've just put 8 past Watford. You know, what has he got to prove? And I think some of the comments in the press, you know, they're there to try and wind him up, aren't they, to be honest? That's what they're there to do. So I wasn't particularly surprised at his comments. And there was another question I heard also about us disrespecting them as well. I thought you gave a brilliant answer to that as well, in terms of, you know, the way of disrespecting a team is to not pile on the pressures, to sort of take your foot off the gas and start playing like a training game. And we didn't do that. We kept at them the whole game.
Was that levelled at him, was it?
Yeah, it was, yeah.
What, because you kept going to try and score? That's ridiculous.
Well, of course it is. And the other ridiculous thing that I heard over the weekend as well, which is a ubiquitous question of 5 points ahead, you know, the season's over, it's Liverpool's. I mean, we're talking about September still. It's an absolute nonsense. There's so much football to be played. We've still got to play Liverpool twice. And to start talking about being a done deal is just ridiculous.
Is there, however, and I do completely understand that, but is there a fear because of the way Liverpool are playing at the moment? And they're not playing well. They're playing without their first choice goalkeeper. They probably shouldn't have beaten Chelsea with the pressure that Chelsea piled on, and should have scored through Mason Mount at the end there. But Liverpool are still winning games. It is 5 points, and I know there's plenty more football to be played, but they don't look like losing, and it could hinge on those 2 games that you guys play.
It could, and they are probably very important games. Liverpool will drop points. They're not going to go the whole season winning every single game. All they need is a little bit of luck going against them. Any game where they go away from home, they will be under pressure, like when we go away from home. And they've got to go to every single big team away from home, and also the smaller teams. I mean, they dropped points at West Ham last season. They drew with Leicester at home last season. Obviously, we took points off them. So they've still got a lot of games. They've got 33 games to go. And they're going to drop more than 5 points. The question is, can we claw back those 5 points? And yes, it's too early to say that they... Although some Liverpool fans will like to think they've got it in the bag. There's no way.
Well, I think they absolutely do, yeah. And you're right, because the crazy thing is that people are looking at those 2 games going, well, that's 6 points. So then you're, well, yeah, they're going to drop points in terms of drawing. You don't just drop points by losing, you drop points by drawing. And law of averages suggests that will happen. Like you said, plenty more football to be played. It is a weird Premier League season, and we are looking at every week being a massive game now, but plenty more football to be played.
Plenty of football to be played, and I think when you see City playing the way that they have, putting 8 past teams, Kevin De Bruyne, of course, you know, who didn't play an awful lot of games last year. I think he played 32 out of 61 games that we played last year. Kevin De Bruyne, he's now back fit, knee, hamstrings all sorted, and we still won 4 trophies. He's now going to play every game for us, hopefully. So I think things are different for City this year as well. And as Paul says, Liverpool are going to drop points.
And he looks incredible. That's 52 assists now since he signed for the club in 2015, more than any other player in that time. He looks frightening, doesn't he? Just the ability he has on the ball. He never looks like giving it away. His assists, his ability to find another player, and his ability to score goals. You'd argue that he's the most complete midfielder in the Premier League.
I'd say he's one of the most complete players in Europe. Mm. He would get into a World 11 at the moment based on current form and possibly form... Ignore last season because he was injured so much, but the season before and where he's playing at a regular level, he is a brilliant player. He's one of the best players I've ever seen. I've been watching football for a long, long time.
Case for the defence as well. A lot of chat about Fernandinho. He's come in. 2 clean sheets. There we go.
Yeah, you could say that. I think it's fair to say that he wasn't under huge pressure. Mm-hmm. But credit to the lad. There were a couple of situations on Saturday where he did have to track back, did have to put a challenge in, and there was no problem at all. He looked very comfortable, very accomplished, but he hasn't really had a major problem with a sort of big centre-forward bearing down on him yet and putting him under real pressure. Can I just go back to KDB for a second as well? That first goal, after whatever it was, sort of 50 seconds, he doesn't look up and he whips that ball in with his right foot into just it was precision stuff. And he does that time and time and time again. And I just think it is, I mean, it's a joy to watch footballers like him playing in a sky blue shirt. And as soon as that ball was whipped in, you just know that the defence is struggling and David Silva got on the end of it. It started a rout.
It did. And that is hours and hours on the training ground as well. Yeah. Like I said, didn't even need to lift up his head.
Nope.
A model pro, you'd say, Kevin De Bruyne as well, never really involved in any kind of scandal. Yes, he's on social media, but anything that you see on social media is normally him and a picture of his kid, exactly, or them doing something in the house. So a real model pro. We're going to be talking about social media a bit more on the Manchester City Fan Show, because there is news, of course, coming out this week with regards to Bernardo Silva and a tweet he put out on Benjamin Mendy, his teammate. We'll be getting into that and a bit more after this.
This is Love Sport.
This is Love Sport, the Manchester City Fan Show on Love Sport, in association with the Man City Show podcast. Nigel Rothband here alongside Paul Denby as well. We're with you for another half an hour. We're going to be bringing you a little bit more reaction to that victory over Watford. Of course, 8-0, 5 goals after 18 minutes. Incredible. The fastest any side has gone ahead 5-0 in a Premier League match. David Silva's goal, the fastest in the Premier League this season. Aguero scoring 7-7. That's the first time anybody's done that since Romelu Lukaku in 2015. The stats and the records just keep coming with this Man City side. And we are looking at 8 reasons to celebrate that game. 8 reasons why you should be a Manchester City fan. Nigel, you're rolling in with number 5.
Okay, I'm going back a bit again now. And this is about records. And something that I think a lot of City fans are very proud of. We hold 2 records here. One for the men's game, one for the women's game, which is the highest gate for a men's game outside of Wembley, which goes back to 1934 against Stoke City in the FA Cup. You asked me a quiz question last week, so I'm going to ask you, do you know what that gate was against Stoke City? My dad was there. It was a quarter final in 1934 against Stoke City, FA Cup at Main Road as it was. And it still stands as the highest gate outside of Wembley.
Outside of Wembley, okay. So I would say it's going to be around the 84,000 mark.
Smart ass. 84,569
there we
is
go.
The correct answer. Excellent. Of course, very recently, only a few weeks ago, of course, the women played against Stretford, and there's a crowd of over 32,000 at that game for a women's game. So both for the men's game and the women's game, Manchester City hold the record.
Incredible. By the way, my guess was better than producer Josh. He went with 113,000. I mean, crikey. Talk about getting him through the gate. Well, I'm glad I got that right. I'm sorry for getting... It's not always good when you ask a quiz question and someone gets it right, because you want to give them the answer that they got wrong. But I do apologise for that one.
I don't apologise. I'm impressed. That's brilliant.
Paul.
Oh, I'm going to play the theme that I did earlier with the first team to do the European domestic double last season. We're the first team to do the domestic treble. And that's a fantastic reason to support Manchester City. No team has done it before. Teams have won 3 trophies in a season, but not the domestic treble, the 3 trophies. And now we've won the Championship, the Premiership, stroke Old Division 1, the FA Cup and the League Cup. We've won each of those 6 times now.
Wow. That's incredible. 2 very good reasons to support Manchester City. 1 from the past and 1 from the present as well. That's the beauty of this show, gents. We're making it all relevant. That's what I like here. The Manchester City Fan Show on Love Sport. Now, someone who is relevant at the moment and scored a hat-trick at the weekend, of course, was Bernardo Silva, who should be in the headlines for the right reasons. However, Bernardo Silva did then release a tweet on his social media on Twitter comparing Manchester City teammate Benjamin Mendy to a character on the packet of a sweet called Conguitos, I'll tell you. It's a sweet brand available in Spain and Portugal. It's caused a bit of a stir. The FA have written to Manchester City asking the club for its response to that tweet. We had Paul Mortimer on Drive earlier on discussing that particular situation. Here's what he had to say.
I'll talk for myself, my own personal experience,
yeah,
not the historical aspects. When you are likened to something like that, when you are ridiculed for looking like that or appearing to be looked like that, when you are looked down on, when you are treated a certain way, marginalised, isolated, bullied, you know, as a kid, because I know I experienced all of that for certain pictures like that, and they come from a by and go gone era where black people were seen as inferior, as lesser, you know, as slaves, as whatever you want to look at. Even if you look at, you know, the black and white minstrel show around that era, how black people were viewed.
And this is exactly that kind of imagery. You've got the overplayed big red lips. The, you've got the popping white eyes.
Right.
It is very minstrel show.
It is very minstrel show. And it's you know, unfortunately, there will be a lot of white people who say, why is this racist? Because it's not on their radar. They've never experienced any kind of abuse linked to pictures like that. You know, from a kid growing up, that's something that I've experienced.
An interesting debate to be had here, fellas. And listen, Paul Mortimer alluded to it there, and he said there will be so many white people that say, why was this racist? And there were responses to the tweet of the Blanco version of the tweet, where it's a white character and not a black character. And people say, well, what if we put that up with Kevin De Bruyne? Would it still be considered racist? And I think when you have these discussions on radio, in the media, we are three white men here having this discussion now, and people will say, well, they can't really comment on it because they don't really know what it's like. I think that the question that's been raised is Bernardo Silva racist? And everybody has said, well, most people have said, no, he's not racist, but was the tweet racist? Yes, it probably was. I think we'll get into the debate here. My opinion is that why do it publicly? Why put it out on social media? And that's a wider debate that you have to have a discussion about. Why not just send it in a private WhatsApp group? Because it seems like Benjamin Mendy, who did respond to the tweet and didn't seem to take offence, a tweet that was then taken down by Bernardo Silva, but quite critically has now kept up the tweet where he said, geez, in the response, I can't just have a laugh with my friend these days. Man City haven't responded yet, but I'm presuming in time, Nigel, they will release some sort of statement, do you think?
Oh, I think they'll have to. I think there's no doubt this has caused quite a stir. And you know, Paul has been very forthright in his views, and I respect that completely. So let's take this sort of step at a time. We both know these are two young men who are active on social media, who are mates. I don't know Bernardo Silva, I've never met him, but he appears to be a very educated young man. He speaks very well, his English is excellent, and I suspect this was a bit of banter, as they say, between him and his friend. Clearly, this is racist. In my view, this is racist to put a picture like that with Mendy as a young child and put those two things together. I can completely understand and recognise that that is a racist thing to do. I don't think, like most people have said, that Bernardo Silva is a racist himself. I'm convinced of that. And you can't, in this day and age, if you're on social media, you can't have that dialogue with your mate through Twitter, because it's going to be picked up and it's going to be seen as it has been and interpreted the way it's been interpreted. And I think it was a huge error of judgment on Bernardo Silva's part. And I think it was a mistake. I think he was wrong to do it. And he was right to take it down. So clearly now the FA will investigate. And I'm sure Manchester City will make the appropriate statement. And I guess that Bernardo Silva will make the appropriate statement. We talked about this on the podcast tonight, actually. And John Stapleton, who comes on our show, actually made a very good point and suggested maybe a large donation to kick it out or something like that might be a good thing to do from Bernardo, to recognise the error that he's made and making a contribution that's going to actually help in the long run to stop racism.
I get that, but my fear with that is the backlash would then come potentially that people might go, oh, here's a rich white man going, here you go, here's some money, go, it can sort it out that way. Whereas maybe it's the education. We often hear John Barnes come out and say, look, you can stop people going into stadiums, you can find these clubs, but it's more about that education. I don't know, and we say that Bernardo Silva is a well-educated young man, you can tell that. He's also a young man, as is Benjamin Mendy. They have their jokes behind closed doors, and is it maybe part of the fact that they probably don't see it as racist because they haven't grown up in that era, and maybe they don't understand it to be racist? But then you also look at the club. Surely someone should be saying to them, guys, you've got to think about what you put on social media. We've seen it in the summer with players that go out and do things abroad and they plaster all this stuff over social media. It's not that bad. In this instance, it is. But ordinarily on social media, it's not that bad. But just do it privately. You've got nothing to prove to your fans. And I know that on one hand, maybe you're trying to connect with your fans, and there's such a big thing about the disconnect between players and fans now. They almost go overboard with social media to be like, no, we're one of you, we're chatting amongst yourselves. But it just didn't need to go on social media, did it?
No, it certainly didn't. I agree with everything that Nigel said. It was naive on Bernardo from what he did. He shouldn't be doing that. Yes, the club has some responsibility to educate and keep the younger players in particular right up to date with what they should be doing on social media. I think I'm pretty certain that there's been private words had with some of the City players about what they have put on social media. And I think Bernardo should really say, yeah, I shouldn't have done that. He should put something out there saying it was a mistake and I will have some re-education there. Whether there's any financial contribution, I understand your point on that, Matt, and could be looked at in that point of view. But he does need something that really comes back on social media to say, yeah, that was a mistake. I was a bit stupid, but I'm certainly not a racist.
Yeah, and of course they do use social media because they make money from it. Maybe that's part of it. But you're right. I think maybe a combined statement or a campaign that they get involved in. Like you said, it's quite clear that Bernardo Silva's not a racist young man. It's just a joke he's had between himself and Benjamin Mendy. And then another way you can almost look at it, I think, is the sense that, are we ever going to be able to deal with the problem if every time a sort of joke is made that it's brought back and, oh, you can't do that, you can't, because that's, you know, we're thinking about what happened all those years ago. Again, I haven't been through that. We haven't been through that. So it's difficult.
And I think all you have to do is listen to Paul Mortimer's words. And I think that helps you understand from his perspective, as you rightly said, we're three white men sitting here having this conversation from our perspective. But I think Paul's words are very, very powerful. And I think he summed it up very, very well.
Indeed. Okay. Moving on, we're going to look ahead to games coming up, and we're going to first start with Preston. We've got Preston in the Carabao Cup. Is this a tournament? And I know we always level this every season at the big clubs, and we frown upon these earlier rounds in the Carabao Cup, but is this a tournament that Pep Guardiola will be going all out to win again this season?
Interesting question, because I think there's different views from City fans. A lot of fans would say, yeah, why can't we go and win it again? We should be able to beat Preston with a reasonable team tomorrow. A mixture of youth and experience. Our second 11, let's be honest about it, is a decent team and could beat most teams in the Premier League, let alone a good championship team, and Preston are near the top. I would be looking to play a mixed team tomorrow. People argue that we've got to concentrate on the Champions League, and my counter-argument to that is, at the moment, the Carabao Cup, we should get through the groups phase relatively easily, he says, a little bit arrogantly perhaps, but I'll say it anyway. Then the next phase of the Champions League doesn't kick in until February, and before the Carabao Cup final, there's only one knockout phase, a round of 16 first leg. So, effectively, you could play and get through and win that one. The FA Cup is the one that interferes more with the Champions League. So I would say, let's go for the Carabao Cup as best we can and put out a decent team tomorrow night.
Certainly Pep's track record has been precisely that. He takes every competition seriously. He wants to win every competition, and indeed last season did, as we know, as I've said a number of times. There's something that makes me think that it might be different this year. I don't know what it is, but I think potentially he might say, actually, this is less important, and actually this year the Premier League, the Champions League, they're the two that we have to win, and might just take his foot off the gas and play a slightly more weakened team than they would have done before. I don't know what makes me say that, but I just feel that's a potential possibility this time round.
I think when you look at priorities this season, like you said, you've got the Premier League, you've got the Champions League. I think those two are the key ones that Pep Guardiola is going to be going all out to win.
And Preston will be up for it. They've made a very good start to their season. There'll be 20-odd thousand there. It's, you know, their cup final, if you like. It won't be straightforward. At all, and we know we've got frailties at the back. I suspect it was very interesting to see him bring on sort of Eric Garcia, Angelino and Cancelo at the weekend against Watford, and I suspect we know the reasons why. I suspect they will all start. Foden, of course, has had a bit of a bug. It wasn't even on the bench. If he's fit, I suspect he might start as well. So you are going to see the changes. As Paul says, we've got a pretty strong second 11. But I'm just feeling that maybe Pep might not be prioritising this quite as much as he has in the past couple of seasons.
100% record in all competitions, I think, for Preston at Deepdale this season. Just quickly, before we move on, another player who may be appearing in the Carabao Cup this week against Arsenal is Muric, who's obviously on loan at Nottingham Forest, but has lost his spot in the side to Bryce Samba, who's come in as a goalkeeper for Forest. Muric, of course, were they errors? You don't know in that opening game against West Brom at the start of the campaign, but this is something that Pep might look at, right, and say, well, hang on a second, There's no point him festering on the bench at Forest. He'd be better off coming back to Manchester City. Are you surprised that he's lost his spot at Forest?
I've not followed their games closely enough to say that he's had such a bad start to the season. But he's a decent goalkeeper. He played well when he played for us last season in the cup competition. So I'm a little bit surprised. Maybe he's lost his confidence after a poor start there, and therefore the management down there has said, actually, we've got to rest you and give you a few games out, and you've got to fight your way back. But good point. If I was Pep, I'd say, well, actually, I'd rather have him back at City to learn more from our goalkeepers and learning from your lot.
Yeah, it does seem bizarre when these players go on loan to other clubs and don't actually end up playing for them. We're going to be looking ahead to the Everton game on the Man City Fan Show on Love Sport.
Love Sport.
That is the opposition view jingle on Love Sport. Gets us very, very excited. It's Manchester City Fan Show here on Love Sport with the guys from the Man City Show podcast, Nigel Rothband and Paul Denby. Delighted to say that we've now got Paul McParlin, Everton author, on the line. Of course, City travelling to Goodison for the late kickoff on Saturday. Things not going too well at Everton, are they, Paul?
No, it's been quite an underwhelming start to the season so far, Matt. I think, you know, with the activity during the summer and the end of the season we had last year, fans were looking forward to, you know, certainly a bigger points haul than we've gathered so far. And the performance Saturday afternoon on Sheffield United was particularly deflating for the fans, and hoping we can remedy this for the City game on Saturday.
What's your take on Marco Silva? A friend of mine, a big Everton fan, over the weekend said that he's concerned Silva is a bit of a fraud. Do you buy into that, or do you think it's still going to come good for the Toffees?
I think the term fraud is a bit too strong in reality. He's only been in the club for, what, you know, 14, 15 months or so now. And yes, I think a number of fans do have some reservations, which will probably heighten after the performance on Saturday. But I think the end of season last year, with the number of results that we got towards the end, and don't forget, Everton's draw against Liverpool actually meant that City won the title. So I think he has shown that he can deliver results. I think the problem is to deliver results over a consistent period rather than little phases where we do well and then phases where we don't do so well.
Contrasting fortunes at the weekend, Paul. We knocked 8 past Watford, and it was 2-0 at home against Sheffield United. Well, first of all, before we go into the City game, what, in your view, what went wrong? Because possession stats, if I read them right, I think were 70% Everton and 30% Sheffield United. What went wrong at the weekend?
Yeah, well, I think from a personal point of view, I thought the team selection was faulty from the start. I think I didn't quite understand why Alex Iwobi, who'd scored 2 in the last 3 games, had been dropped to make way for Bernard. And I think, bearing in mind that Sheffield United are renowned for their sort of physical style, I didn't quite fathom the reasoning behind Dominic Calvert-Lewin not being played and Moise Kean being put up front instead, because he's not really a holding type of forward, whereas Dominic Calvert-Lewin certainly is. But the team just didn't gel. I mean, even though City are a wonderful team to watch, you know, you had the odd game last season where City didn't gel, so it can happen. Hopefully it can be remedied for this weekend.
So were you one of the fans booing your side off? Heard quite loud boos at Goodison.
I make a point of never booing the team off. The players go out there to do the best. I really don't see there's any point in booing. I was actually quite annoyed by the number of fans by me who left when Sheffield United's second goal went in with about 15 minutes to go. You know, you support the team through thick and thin, and as Man City fans, you know that better than anybody.
Certainly right there, Paul. I've supported City for a long time. And I, like you, I've never booed them off, even in the darkest days when we were getting relegated to the third tier. I just wonder, do you think, as we did, we bounced back after a poor result, let's put it that way, against Norwich a couple of weeks ago. Do you think you can bounce back and really put on a performance against City the weekend?
Yeah, well, I think the first hurdle to overcome is Sheffield Wednesday away in the League Cup tomorrow evening. I think it's vital for Everton to get a result in that game. Assuming the best, and we do get results in that game, then, you know, it does lift the atmosphere for the game on Saturday against City. And as you know, Goodison can be quite an intimidating ground for teams to come to, particularly when the team is getting the backing of the fans behind them. So I am expecting a reaction. You know, I think most Everton fans deep down aren't expecting us to get anything from the game, but it just needs an early goal. It just needs a few fierce tackles. It just needs a bit of pressure. And then the crowd will get behind the team, and hopefully the team will respond to that.
Can I ask about Fabian Delph as well, Paul? Because obviously there's an interest there. He's obviously joined Everton from City. Didn't manage to sort of the last season or so sort of have a regular starting berth. He's sort of put his hand up, I think, following the weekend's performance and kind of taken some of the criticism on the chin. Your thoughts about him as an acquisition and his future at Goodison?
Yeah, well, I think particularly with Idriss Agana-Gueye going to PSG in the summer, that left quite a void now as a midfield. I know Delph isn't quite a like-for-like replacement, but you know, he's an experienced midfielder. He's got leadership qualities, because one thing Everton have sadly lacked the last one or two seasons is a player who's prepared to lead and prepared to, you know, let other players know what standards are expected from the team. I can see Delph being a future Everton captain in a season or two, so I think the overreaction to Delph so far has been quite favourable. And obviously, it's good to have somebody in the dressing room who knows what it's like to win championships and can pass on that experience. So I really do hope that Delph can give us some insight into how City function, and maybe with his knowledge could help us sneak a victory.
An inside view. Paul, thank you for joining us. Just before you go, a quick score prediction.
Well, as we said before, I never boo my own team. I never predict my own team to lose. So I'd be quite happy for us to get a 1-1 draw on Saturday. And I think City's record playing at 5:30 on Saturdays this season isn't that good, is it?
Oh, here we go. A lovely parting gift from Paul McFarlane. Paul, I'm going to quickly get rid of you before they bite back. Thank you very much for joining us. That was Paul McFarlane, Everton author. Oh, we got a little dig in there, fellas. He got a little dig in. Right, we are going to finish up with these eight reasons as to why we should be supporting Manchester City. We are six down. Nigel, number seven, please.
Yeah, I'm going to bring it right up to date here, Matt, and just talk about the greatest manager on the planet, Pep Guardiola. The football he's playing, and just pick out three players in this recent era that have won everything for this great club: Vincent Kompany, Sergio Aguero, and David Silva. I could mention many others, but I think a bit like Belli and Summerby, I talked about earlier on, I think they're in a similar category. They talk about statues for these guys outside the Etihad. I wouldn't be surprised, and I look forward to seeing the three of them standing proudly outside the Etihad Stadium.
Absolutely, Paul.
I'm going to go back a little bit again, and there's a stand named after Colin Bell, and there's a reason for that. He was a hero in the late 60s, early 70s, till his tragic injury in 75 against Stretford. Effectively, the game that made me just realise what a hero he was his comeback game. It was Boxing Day 1977 against Newcastle at Main Road. He was on the subs bench. It was 0-0 at half-time. And he came on. He clearly wasn't the player that he had been in the past, but he came on to a standing ovation. There were grown men, and this is no exaggeration, there were grown men with tears in their eyes as he came onto the pitch. And it wasn't as if he had a fantastic game in that second half, but the atmosphere lifted so much. We went on and won 4-0 from 0-0 at half-time. And I remember reading in a programme subsequently, that was Colin Bell's favourite moment, coming onto the pitch at 0-0 at half-time with his injury. He never was the same player, but what a player he had been.
Of all time in a Manchester City shirt, that was his favourite moment.
He put that in the final programme against Main Road. There was some of the players put their favourite moments in, and Colin Bell wrote that. And the reason I know that is my name is in that final programme, because that was my favourite moment as well. And Colin Bell put his little summary next to it, so I remember that one.
Lovely stuff. And a second reference of grown men crying.
I just thought that. That's what football does to you, Matt.
We are a liberal fan show, if anything. Right, we're going to quickly just finish on the Everton game. Your thoughts? I mean, Paul thinks it was going to be a 1-1 draw. How do you think it's going to go?
Yeah, listen, I think City have got rid of the difficulty in East Anglia. They've bounced back twice now. I think we've got sort of our back four sorted. We'll have won easily in midweek in the Carabao Cup, and I think City will go away and win 3-1 at Everton.
3-1. Paul?
I think Pep will have one eye not on the Carabao Cup, which will have been, but we've got the Champions League coming back the following week as well. It's a Tuesday night game, so I think he'll be thinking about it, and that's perhaps going to maybe the team is going to think how he's got to play it. I still think we'll win, but I'm going 2-1.
It's a relatively good record as well at Goodison. I mean, Pep Guardiola's won two from the past two seasons. There was the 4-0 defeat, wasn't there, in his first season at the club. I actually think that was almost a bit of a wake-up call for Pep Guardiola to have a bit of a reality check as Manchester City manager, to realise what it takes to win the Premier League.
Yeah, that certainly was. That was a terrible day when we lost 4-0, and people were saying Pep can't cope with the Premier League, he's not good enough. but I think he learned an awful lot that day.
And it looks quite promising after this as well. In terms of the run, you mentioned Dinamo Zagreb you've got in the Champions League, then it's Wolves, then it's Palace, Atalanta in the Champions League as well, Villa, Southampton, and that's all before the Liverpool game coming up in November. So you've got a good run of fixtures leading up to that.
Yeah, and we did say that, and we included Norwich, of course, in that as well when we were talking about that run of fixtures. So, listen, anything can happen. You look at those fixtures, you look at them on paper and say they're all winnable, but as we all know, it's not played on paper.
It's not played on paper. Nigel Paul, thank you very much for joining me, as always.
Cheers, Matt.
This has been the Manchester City Fan Show on Love Sport in association with the Man City Show podcast. We will be back next week at 9 p.m. on Monday.
Thanks for downloading this podcast from Love Sport Radio. For more, go to lovesportradio.com for all the latest podcasts, news and views. Or for more, follow us at Love Sport Radio on Twitter.